Seth Merrow standing by. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I remember Cruel Summer. Was it? And the cover, you said Bananarama, but that was a Go-Go song, right?
Yeah. It was a Go. Yeah, absolutely. Go-Go song. Yeah, yeah. Belinda Carlisle and company. But Fun Boy 3, and I think Bananarama backs them up on that. I'm almost positive. Which made me think of Cruel Summer.
And it all adds up. I mean, that goes back to my... I used to DJ one night a week at Skidmore. They started a thing years and years ago where in the summertime there weren't any students, so they would have people come in from the community. And so I started to go in and
wow.
do Monday nights, and subsequently it transitioned into the year as well. And so there was probably about, I don't even know, maybe a 10-year period where I was filling up the Monday night slot, and those bring back some of the memories, Bananarama, Cruel Summer, and some of those types were right in the wheelhouse during that time.
Yo, 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 DJ Go TV.
Wax of Stacks.
Oh, my God. I when you started, before you said you DJed at Skidmore, I thought you were going to really take us back and say you DJed one night a week at Rafters, you know, and that would have brought the house down. Seth at the Rafters.
I mentioned the Rafters to somebody the other day, and they were kind of like, Rafters? Oh man, now I am old. That old Wednesday, the Wednesday night dollar special, and those were my years as a lifeguard at a country club pool over in Amsterdam. And luckily, nobody had any problems in the pool on Thursday morning because I was eating breakfast at Spa City Diner at 5 o'clock in the morning, and then at the pool at 8:30.
Those of you that know Seth for his night owl activities, you can imagine. You can imagine what this was like. Unbelievable. One of the great night crawlers of Saratoga environs, Seth Merrow, everybody.
And for folks who don't remember, the Rafters was like a phenomenal place back in the day out by the lake. It's not there anymore. There's a housing development there now, but it was the
burned down.
And Wednesday was the night because there was the dollar drink special, so the place would be rocking.
Well, and you also had staff nights, you know, when all the restaurant staff and kitchen help, wait staffs would be out on Monday nights. That was a big thing in Saratoga for years. And, you know, when we bring out the Rafters, I mean, which, by the way, for those that know the history of Saratoga, know a little bit about the history of Saratoga, I'm pretty sure the Rafters was the Riley Lake House, right, way back?
That's a good question. I'd have to look that up.
I think it was. I think it was the Riley, and you know there were all the nightclub casinos on the lake, and you know it's funny. We Seth and I had Dave Hill on TV on Sunday to promote the Vapors, and you know. We talk about the lake houses. I mean, there was the illegal gambling going on at the, you know, at the lake houses, you know, going back, you know, into the middle part and early and middle part of the 20th century. And I've got a table and chair, Seth, right here. I'm looking to my left in my, you know, I've got my main office and then I got like an ante room. And somewhere I along the line, I bought a small card table and four chairs that came out of the Riley Lake House way back. And there was like a little documentation with it. And so I don't know. I don't think those chairs would have supported Diamond Jim Brady, but probably a gun mall would have easily fit in there pretty good.
And it was funny talking to David Hill about the book about Hot Springs, just how closely related kind of the stories are of Hot Springs and Saratoga Springs, the illegal gambling in the, you know, early and mid part of the century, and the racetrack and the springs. It really is like a mirror image between the two cities.
You know, and you mentioned Mary Lou, and it makes me realize that they drew they're drawing, or they drew already just now, the Whitney. Do we have answers? Do we have a Whitney draw?
They were supposed to go
11 o'clock.
At
11.
11. Yeah, I'm just seeing it. Pull up the Twitter and see if they're in.
The Facebook
looks like
page.
There is a Twitter of the field. Number one, by my standards. Number two, improbable. Number three, code of honor. Number four, Mr. Buff. Number five, Tom's Detat. Field of five. A select field of five.
That is a select field of five. That is a good group. And interesting. And there is a little bit of speed. This might this will be really interesting. This is kind of, you know, people are going to be flummoxed, and I'm sure the first thing out of everybody's mouth on the internet will be, "How can there only be five?" Go back through the fields. You'll find plenty of five horse Whitneys from the golden age of racing. Not to worry.
And again, these are five. I mean, it's hard to find five better horses right now to put together than this. So it's going to be a very intriguing field. If you can put five together and they're five top class runners, that's still a pretty strong race to watch and wager on, because it'll play into picks and whatnot. And it, you would think there would be nobody in. Yeah, Tom's Detat probably will stand out on the wagering, but I don't know if by a lot.
Well, Code of Honor is going to get plenty of attention, and Improbable too. I mean, outsiders, quote unquote, by my standards and Mr. Buff, but the conversation starts with Tom's Detat, and then the next choices splits up between Improbable and Code of Honor.
Yeah, again, it looks like a fun addition, yeah. And then the undercard is going to have Midnight Bijou, so it's going to be another strong Saturday at Saratoga.
Interesting. I heard Bijou in there a little bit, as in movie theater. Are we Bijouing or Bijouing?
Bijou. Yeah, right.
Okay. All right. I thought it had a little bit of a Bijou kind of like at the Bijou,
No, I was going Bijou.
Okay. All right. I think.
Now you got me thinking about it.
Well, because I also hear people say, Bijou, like kazoo.
Well, I mean, if there's a name to be pronounced wrong, I was talking to some people the other day about the mashup names, where it's supposed to be read one way, but inside the mashup, you can see other words.
Yes.
And I will invariably pick the wrong combination.
Well, there's a horse, and I gotta get Steve Christ on the show anyway. It's not a summer without Steve Christ at Saratoga. But there was a horse that Steve used to have fun with about that, and just the other day I talked about the horse on the West Coast that is one word, and it's Steal the Diamonds. But the first time I saw it, I thought it was Stealthy. I thought it was Stealthy Diamonds, and so I a couple of times I called it Stealthy Diamonds until Jay Privman slapped me around a little, and as he's wont to do, and said, "Steal the Diamonds, Dopey." And I said, I thought it was Stealthy.
Yeah, doing the afternoon handicapping show, having four tracks and handicapping it. There's nothing like those mashups, and you've pronounced it wrong, and 3 minutes later that the track announcer comes out, and immediately you're like, "Oh, that's how it was supposed to be pronounced." Yep, I got that one wrong.
Well, and speaking of track announcers, I understand that last night Peter Berry swallowed a moth during the seventh race. I heard there was quite the hubbub.
Oh, I'm going to have to pull up that call. That has to be one of that'll go up there with the earthquake call and some of the other novelties.
I love it. I love it. I'll tell you, my man, Joe Horn, Joe is pulling out all of the great chestnuts, including the College Inn, which was Newman's Lake House, and a throwback to, dancers in up in the cages. So we've obviously triggered. We may have triggered some, you know, hallucinations and some convulsions, but we've triggered some nostalgia for old time Saratoga.
Well, I mean, downtown, I could go through them all. Park Place was the big one, which the former bank with the bar was essentially where Teller stood, and that was another big dollar night. It was dollar iced teas, and that was quite a night at Park Place. Now it's T-shirt shop and the gifts and whatnot on the corner there. But that was for years. That was a haunt.
Barclays was great, absolutely great, thanks. A lot of places I used to go are still around. I mean, starting with Sperry's and where we'd pretty much start. Because when I first started coming regularly after I got out of school, I mean, I'd come here a bit chasing after Vicky Vogel, who I adored at Skidmore, but. Later on, my friend John Hubbard, my late friend John Hubbard, who was working at the Bennington Banner, and when he worked in Bennington, he was very friendly with Ridge and the crew that then left Bennington and took over and gave really rise to the Sperry's that we know now. And so they had barely opened, and John told me, go see Ridge at Sperry's. And so, I was there from day one, really. I mean, the first year they were open and got very friendly, and that was my hang. So, I mean, there's plenty of places, that are still around, really. I mean, the places you like, too. You like all the old standards.
Gaffney's but Caroline Street, I mean, I'm still friends with the folks that own and bartend down at Desperate Annie's, so I'm still a regular there. Obviously, a lot of people and places, I haven't been there in a few months, but Desperate Annie's on Caroline Street. I mean, obviously, back in the day and still being there, Tin and Lin,
I guess
the debunked notion that Don McLean wrote American Pie there. I think Don McLean himself debunked that notion, but that was floating around for a long time.
I love it. This is one of those topics that it could be easily a rabbit hole. We haven't mentioned Madame Jamel's.
Oh, right. Yeah, now Django's.
I haven't set foot. And, when I first moved to town, what I ended up drinking a lot until I quit drinking was at Clancy's, which I had never gone to much. And then when I moved to Greenwich and I would come into Saratoga, and you want to talk a real gin mill. That's what you call a gin mill.
Well, Popeye Desperate Annie's too. I mean, that's not my thing. The local cops in there, and you get the college kids and good jukebox. But yeah, Clancy's a little further down the street. That's a long time spot as well. Yeah, there are a number on Caroline Street that have been there, going concerns for years, and there are a number that have been there and just have changed names over the years, but they're still there.
As is Seth. Seth is still there.
Yes. As they say, typically I'll be sitting at the end of the bar looking out the window at the street from Desperate Annie's during the Saratoga season on weekends. But I have not made a weekend trip downtown so far this season just because of the situation. It's a little funky, but I will. I will.
We have every confidence in you. Let's take a look, Seth. I got Scotty McKeever joining us in a couple of minutes, and we'll talk about his win in the Monmouth Pick Your Prize, one of the top players and contest players around. Let's glance at the card today, and just looking at the scratches and seeing if it affected much. The MTOs are all gone, and other than the MTOs, there's only a couple of notable scratches. Reed Can comes out of the sixth part of the entry, and that leaves Topper T, the former Mott trainee. And speaking of Mott, I believe it's his birthday.
Oh, good point.
But I don't think he's got a starter. Oh, there it is, Lone Rock. I think he's only got Lone Rock. Is that the only starter for?
Yes. It is. Good call.
All right. And 12-1 for Lone Rock. I used Lone Rock at the bottom of my I included.
Didn't, but now with Reed Kahn out, it allows me to pull him in because I had some check marks next to him moving back into the mock barn.
Scratch helped me. It's a good thing you talked to me.
Exactly.
Just Howard, Graham Motion took Just Howard out of the rich $80,000 allowance, the co-feature with the Day at the Spa. I was admonished by Andy yesterday for calling it the feature when Day at the Spa was earlier on the card, but the late card feature, this $150,000 optional claimer. We love these. So, all right, let's give everybody a glance at the, how about the late pick five? Let's go through it real quick.
Sounds good. That's sixth race. I used the big fundamental on top. I went 6-5-1, and now I'll pull the two in. But I mean, the question mark obviously is the layoff. Hasn't been seen since March of last year. Goes out for not only trainer Todd Pletcher, but owner Todd Pletcher, who owns the horse with his father. I think the horse has a little more talent, a little more class maybe than this bunch, a little bit, but hasn't been seen since last March and comes back for a tag. But this is a seven-year-old gelding, so I wonder if they're just being a little bit crafty. The workouts say the horse probably is back ready to run. We're getting 6-1 on the morning line. I'll be interested to see what the horse goes off at, but I'll use a little big fundamental on top. American Power off the two nice tries recently. Number-wise, good tries. Last time was in against a little bit better. The race two back was a better finish, and the horse is in with that class today. And then Pete's Play Call I thought was interesting too, on a little bit of class relief back to what maybe the comfort zone. So I have it 6-5-1-2 in that sixth.
I'm just putting up the changes on my at Derby Trail, and I'll give you my quick rundown. I'm pretty much in tune with you, with American Power on top. The big fundamental, 6-1, I doubt that that holds. He'll take money, and Pletcher's got nice numbers with this kind of returnee. Pete's Play Call, definitely, and Lone Rock, as I mentioned. I had at the bottom as kind of an exotics inclusion, and Mott Birthday Players, that is your only opportunity today. So FYI, the seventh is one of two turf sprints. The pick four starts with this and ends with a turf sprint group as well of maidens. What are we doing in the seventh?
I'm hoping Sayop turns out to be the speed. I have that one on top, but you know, I'm not super confident because Vici, I think, can go out and challenge. But I put Sayop on top, 4-10-8-6, and I'll hope that that one off the seasonal. Well, wasn't really a seasonal debut because it was a January race, but came back in June and had the near miss last time. Cuts back a half a furlong. I'll put that one on top. But Kitten's Cat, maybe a little bit interesting. Claimed last time. Linda Rice trains now and moves up, obviously, class-wise off the claim. But given what we saw last time and the complexion of this field, I think this horse will be heard from in the lane. Jose Ortiz on board again today. And then Vici in the third spot. Doesn't like to win. Doesn't seem to have a lot of heart. Hasn't won in the past couple of seasons in 11 starts. But has plenty of early speed, and that's always dangerous. So I couldn't leave that one out at 8-1. So I have it 4-10-8-6.
And for me, too far off. I actually am going to use Back to His Roots, though, with Terra Nova 6-1 inside, and should get a a real nice trip inside the shortest way around. Then Sayf, who is just obvious. Secretary at War 12-1. Sign me up for that. And then Ghoul, who I kind of just, out of respect, Peter Miller's so good with these, and Rosario gets aboard. He's got races further down that would be, very competitive and very good in this spot. State bred allowance, 1/8 on the main track.
I went 2-6-8-5. I put BB Banker on top. Had the quarantine layoff. The comeback was a very nice win. I don't know the story, but it was a voided claim. And I don't normally like this class move. I like it the other way. I like when horses move from state bred allowance into open claimer. To me, that's a really potent move. So I'm not as high going the other way. But what we saw from this horse last time, I think, indicates that maybe this horse is just in really good and kind of career form right now. So I'll stick there. But Blackjack Davey off the maiden breaker in the second, career start, I think belongs with this field. Danny California consistently fires numbers that I think match up nicely with this group. And if I was going to play around a little bit, Giant Shoes for Brad Cox probably has to step it up. With only the five starts, and this essentially being the third start back from a February layoff, maybe the horse is primed for a little bit of a better effort today. And I think the morning line could hold up for that one. So Giant Shoes may be the interesting alternative. 2, 6, 8, and 5 for me.
2, 6, 8, and 5 for you. I had BB Banker on the sort of on the bottom end. Danny California and Blackjack Davey. I'm going to try to, you know, kind of tiptoe a little bit with them as the A plays. And then 6% caught my attention. The Jimmy Jerkins down inside. I thought 6% was the price that you wanted to use, as well as BB Banker and the 7 I'm going to use in multis. Dancers for Token scares me a little bit. Potentially.
Robbie Davis trainee.
Yep. Exactly.
And his kid won the other day as a trainer. That was fun to see.
Yes, Edmund. Yes. The 9th, and you've got what is going to be a mojo horse clearly in Wissahickon. And for those that know the Philadelphia region and the Delaware Valley, the Wissahickon's a river that runs north of Philadelphia into the Schuylkill.
I left that one out, and I may regret it, and I said it this morning on the show. I mean, 8 wins and 12 starts. I wasn't sure what to do with that one, but I went 8, 7, 2, and 3. And again, I will regret it after. I love playing the Augustan horses when they come up to Saratoga. For years, they were trained by Jonathan Shepherd. Now Jonathan Thomas has some of them. So I may regret it, but I put Devimani on top. The race 2 back was just good enough. I just wonder if maybe Gidu has enough speed to steal this, and that's not going to help Devimani, who went 1.25 miles last time. I'm wondering if this one got dulled a little bit, but the race 2 back was good enough, so I'm going to go there. Breaking the Rules to me is interesting off the seasonal debut win for Shug. I think that one is in the mix. Therapist in the 3rd spot, also off a seasonal win and a little stake last time. And as I say, Gidu may be dangerous on the front end. And mm-hmm. Again, I may regret leaving the 1 out of the mix.
No, you're going to. And Wissahickon on top for me. Therapist, I'm using Gidu. I picked the 3rd, and now with Just Howard out, I'll actually swing over to Breaking the Rules for Shug, who may very well be on his way to Stakes Company. And then in the nightcap, there may be a horse that, you know, for those that want to spread earlier, there's a chance that Sequin is really good, and Sequin might blow this thing apart. But if it isn't Sequin, well, then there's a handful to potentially use. What'd you do in the 10th?
I went the 1 entry, 9, 4, and 6. Of the 1 entry, I prefer the 1A, 1787. Constitution on top. I really like that. Didn't quite live up to that win early breeding in the first start, but a 55-1 ran 3rd in a field of 12. Dan produced a sibling called Assorted Humor that won its career debut. Another sibling was called Great Hunter. That one finished 2nd, then 1st, then 3 seconds and another 1st, and those last 4 were all stakes races. But they were back in 2006, so the dam may be getting a little long in the tooth, but I'll put 1A on top. I thought Al Stahl's first or 0 to 60 was interesting. Sibling called Muchacha Uno that 3rd, then 9th, 2nd, 2nd, and 1st in the 5th career start, which was a turf race up here at Saratoga a couple of years ago. Another sibling called Winding Bay that won its career debut. So the 1A over the 9, but yeah, Sequin, experience counts, and of the experience, that's the direction you have to go, and may just run away and hide for Wesley Ward. So 1 entry, 9, 4, and 6 for me.
Well, and the ones that I used otherwise, the 2, Let Them Eat Cake for Ian Wilkes, who gets back to turf and shortens up. Ian, very effective. In fact, Nick Damaro wrote about this in his analysis. Very effective and gets Rosario. Very effective turf sprinting. Zacapa for Brad Cox. And then a horse that kind of grabbed me instead of the firsters. On second glance, Mumbai scares me. And I'm gonna maybe a little saver action on the 7, Mumbai, for Chris Clement, second time starter. And that one I didn't expect to include. And then I used the two firsters as C's. Seth, a very fun sequence today, the pick five. And I've got to go to Albany, so I will not see you out there. We will talk over the weekend and look forward to Loose on the Lead Sunday.
Yeah, looking forward to it. A handicapping show this morning, you kind of alluded to it today, and I've handicapped tomorrow's card. There are a few races on both cards where I think you can have equal confidence in about 6 or 7 horses, which may bode well for folks that hit the pick plays on the 2 days. So good luck to everybody, and we'll see you Sunday in here for Loose on the Lead.
There he is, everybody. DJ GoTB, Seth Merrow, spinning the wax for you, and daily in the mornings watching Capital OTB and on CapitalOTB.com and EquiDaily.com, and his analysis, Seth Merrow 2, on your Twitter machine. We'll stay right here because standing by is one of the top players and one of the top contest players, and Scotty McKeever with another win added to his list of accomplishments on the contest scene, takes down the Monmouth Pick Your Prize on Saturday, and he did it in style. Scotty, good morning. Welcome. Congratulations.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. And I'm delighted to get you on, and an opportunity to, you know, spend 20 minutes here, 15 minutes, and, you know, just, you know, touch on how, you know, how you're approaching it. And, you know, you've had years and years of success, and you obviously you still love it.
I do. You know, I think the importance of the win in the Monmouth Park tournament was, you know, showing people that you can have success with no pre-handicapping if you don't have the time. I like the handicap, but sometimes I just don't have the time. And, you know, as you probably know, I didn't put any handicapping time whatsoever into this, and I just used my system, and I went in, and last minute I'm like, I was hosting a show while I was playing the tournament, and so I'm betting other tracks along the way, and then I would go in about 2 minutes before the race would go off and go, okay, well, the GSR is this, the SOR is this, genetic strength rating, strength of race. And anyways, I think that's the concept of Equine Edge. And I'm trying to bring that because I'm pretty passionate about our sport, as you know, Steve, but I think that, you know, when I used to handicap with just traditional PPs, I would put 8 to 10 hours a day into handicapping. And it really made that I had no life. And that was tough on my family, friends. And that was the point of bringing Equine Edge to the public.
Well, and talk, you know, absolutely wanted to have an opportunity to have you talk about Equine Edge. And, you know, this is another example. It came up earlier this morning with Scott Carson with his little contest site that he's, you know, kind of remorphed to Public Handicapper. And, you know, what you've done, and so many have done, Optics EQ and Timeform US, and I mean the dedication and, you know, the commitment to the sport and to giving people tools. And, you know, then you think about the ongoing work of Jerry Brown and Thorograph, you know, always trying to improve the product. And there's so many people investing time and money and essentially, you know, granted their subscription services, but it's designed to share knowledge and help people do better.
Well, don't you think too, like, if you're, you know, this is where it's coming, you know, our sport is kind of in the dark ages, right? Where we haven't progressed along with other industries. And if we're going to, you know, we need people to bet more, but have more success. We need them to not have to spend all day long in front of PPs. We need them to be able to enjoy their life, have fun, go to the track. Cause you know, when you look at some of the old clips of past days of the track, and we've experienced them too, like in the 80s, things were more fun. You enjoyed things more, and that kind of stopped at the track, and it shouldn't be work. It should be a lot of fun. This is a fun sport. It's interactive, and that's what we've created. It's going to take some time. We're having success, but it's going to take time for people to get used to it. It took me a year to get off of PPs. We have some PPs in there, but the, you know, it took a while. It definitely takes a while because, you know, I've been handicapping for 36 years and you just can't, you can't stop, you know, doing what you're traditionally used to doing.
Well, and that in so many different capacities, that's the challenge that that players face.
For sure. Well, you know, and we're habit driven too, right? And we're used to looking down and so that's tough to break, but you know, this is where it's going. You know, it's like the stock market, same thing, right? You're competing. So you've got regular people competing against systems and things like that. And I tell people all the time, I'm like, okay. So they're like, well, what is this? I mean, and I'm like, well, here's the thing. It just gives you a head start. So you have to look at eliminating horses. And what the best way to do that with our win percentages, it'll say, well, this horse has a 2% chance of winning. This one has a 3%. And then so you can quickly just eliminate those horses, not look at them anymore. And so it cuts the handicapping time down. And these things are really important. And I would say to you too, Steve, like if I said, okay, Steve, you've got 8 hours to handicap Del Mar. Realistically, what do you think you would win at? Like to say, okay, it doesn't matter the payout, just win. Just find the horse to win. What do you think you would hit at? Maybe 25 or 30% at best?
Well,
our win percentages
probably
are all tracks. That's one track. Our win percentages hit at 36% all tracks. So now you're starting from that point, right? So you see how much time has been cut out just by that alone. Now, if you do some good handicapping, then you can even make that better possibly.
Hey, Scotty, talk about the evolution of this, and there's more and more, you know, predictive technology? Is that the fair terminology?
Yeah, it is. And so, like, what's happening with these AIs is artificial intelligence. For people that aren't sure, they continue to learn. They observe. They analyze. Just like the human brain does, and they're getting better and better. And like with our algorithms, we've got 23 algorithms on our site, right, that do different things. It's crazy. Steve, we've got algorithms that actually look to find the horse that's most likely to be third. Like it, and they work in combination on our ticket generator. But this is where AI gets smart. Like our algorithms, they're learning as they're going along. So they're slowly getting better and better. And it's a slow process, but they're doing it all on their own. We don't even have to do anything. So it's pretty crazy. But an AI is really more here to assist you. People are afraid of it because if they don't understand what it's doing exactly and how it comes up with the numbers that it comes up with, initially they're afraid and they don't trust. Well, that's me. I overthink. So I'm like, okay, you're saying this is a top horse, but you know what? I don't like this horse, and I bet against it, and it beats me every time. So I think that what I've learned with my own program is that I add to it, but don't subtract. So if it says to me this, then I'll use that, and then I'll enhance it hopefully by adding a couple of horses.
Well, and in fact, I mean, to tie in specifically the contest on Saturday at Monmouth, you were, you know, you weren't hemorrhaging money, but you were down to 500 and change, and
I was.
It was an all Monmouth contest, right? So you got to come up with a miracle Hail Mary. What does the system tell you, and how did you approach it?
All right, So, I'm doing I did a 4.5-hour webinar, and I'm doing this, and I'm betting other tracks, and I'm hosting the show, and I'm losing. Oh, then I was playing, and I couldn't get into the site. So I was playing under TVG, and I couldn't get in, and so I think I missed the first couple of races as well, and I had a couple of entries, and but at one point at Monmouth, the system won 9 straight races. It won 10 of 13 that day, 9 straight races. And I'm playing against it the entire day. Like I'd like the moron that I am. And, so finally in the last race, the 13th race, I didn't think I could win because the field was short. If I remember correctly, it was shortened. So I'm like, all right, what do I do? Well, we have an algorithm, which we call the Scotty algorithm and Scotty long shots. And so I took the Scotty long shot. It was 32% to win, and then I took the top Scotty pick that was 31% to win. Though they were far and above the other horses in the race, and I had $552 left in the account. I just did a $552 cold exact And I got a little bit lucky because the big favorite, the two horse, actually stumbled out of the start, and I needed every bit of that to win. And when I went in to see what the payout was going to be, it said it was $6. So when the race was over and I went back to look and it said $9, I was stunned.
So the $9, sixty-six times.
Right. And that gave me, what was it, 50, 200 and change. And that was enough to beat the second place person at 4,800. And I'm really aggressive, though. I mean, I'm either gonna win or I'm coming in last. I mean, that's just the way I am, for good or for bad. I get a lot of criticism for that, but I like to win. I don't like to come in second.
Well, and the result, I mean, there's obviously the bankroll money, number one. Then you took the cash prize, which was $11,475. Then you get to take two picks off the board, and you took the BC seat, which is a $10,000 value. And then there was the cash prize list. There were six cash prizes available, and you took the $9,700. So not a bad afternoon.
Oh, it's fantastic. Great tournament. And, I know it was off the turf, and that's a drag for everybody involved. But considering everybody did a really good job, it was the first time I played in that tournament. I don't have a lot of time often, but I've not played in a ton of tournaments. But I've done fairly well because I'm just really busy. And if without the system, there's no way that I could be pulling this off. It's not possible. It's subjective, though, right? It's not telling me what to do. It's just an assisted tool is the way I look at it. And so I'm still making decisions. We get brand new people that love the system, and they're using it like I am. And I've got 36 years of experience playing, and I'll lose the race because I bet wrong, which, is half the battle. And they bet right, and they don't even know what they're doing because they trusted the system and I didn't. So I think that's what's encouraging about this site as well.
A couple of quick notes too, while we've got you, and we, number one, give everybody the site
equineedge.com, and we're all AI based, and there's 23 different algorithms on the site. I appreciate you bringing that up, and you can actually sign up for free by going to equineedge.com, and you get three free races a day. It's usually the top track that's running that day. Like today, you get the first three races of Saratoga. And we give people the opportunity to see if they like it and use it. And in some cases, it hits people right away, and they're like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing. And then some traditional handicappers, Steve, they're like, what the hell is this? And I'll never use this. And then some come back, and then, sometimes it takes some time.
How long, and obviously it is, as you just said, you referred the – it's an ongoing project, and you're constantly, looking to improve the algorithm. How long has it taken you to get it to where it is?
13 years.
13 years. Unbelievable.
I mean, I started working on this 13 years ago, and it's taken to get it. I've got an amazing team of guys, smart guys, hardworking, dedicated. They believe in the project, and we know that's going to take some time. And so we're all in. And we love the game, and we want to change the game. And this is what the game needs. It really does. It needs some good handicapping tools that are quick. In my humble opinion, not to put down anybody, it's, because it's an evolution. But the last thing we need right now is another stat. That's just my opinion.
What seems to be really attractive about this concept, too, Scotty, is that it gives the individual player the kind of tools that we're fighting against with the CAW teams.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. And by the way, too, Steve, on another note, our algorithms, most of them, they're all a flat bet loss. Okay. It's not profitable, but that being said, it includes takeout. And in many cases, we're only at about a 6-9% flat bet loss. So if you do any kind of improving on your handicapping or of the tools, you can be profitable. But betting is a huge part of this, right? But and the other thing too, Steve, is interactiveness, right? Being interactive and it's fun. It's fun to use too. So that's another thing. But yes, you're also dealing with so many other different, to your point, but you're also dealing with you know, a lot of people that have algorithms, like a lot of times you'll see where the race goes off and a horse is 4-1 and all of a sudden halfway through the race, he's 2-1. There's some very sophisticated systems out there right now. Now, do they hurt the game? Some would say they do, but they're adding to the pools, which we all need, right? So you just have to find the right horses and you need to get that information quick. And I think that's where the, where it's going. And you've got to be, you know, you got to be quick and you've got to have good information and you have to have it fast.
What was your take on the past week with these two pick six hits at Pleasanton and then the Del Mar Sunday night?
Well, be more specific what you mean when you said my take.
I just was curious about, I mean, the way in which there's nothing untoward per se, but it just seems odd that the machines put that much in to that specific target.
To your point, what happens, Steve, what happens in those situations is these are really sophisticated algorithms. So what they do is they zero in. They're not, ours is handicap based, right? There's way more sophisticated systems than ours. What theirs is all odds based. So they're looking at wager types and they're going, let's just say it's a win. And they look at that and they go, okay, this horse is 6-1 right now. That's tremendous value. We thought this horse should be 2-1.
Right.
All of a sudden, right when the horses are going into the gate, a huge wager goes in on that horse.
Yep.
And they're zeroing in on that type of stuff. If they see a value in a pick six, then the algorithm will automatically just play a certain amount and think, this is the value of this, so we can put this much into this particular wager type. So that's the way
they're
working. They're getting way, way more sophisticated.
Yep. Well, Scott McKeever is there to help you get more sophisticated. Scotty Pick Six. If you're not following him on Twitter, you should be. And equineedge.com for a tool that could take you to that next level. Scotty, well done. Thanks so much. And we'll talk again.
Enjoy, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Scotty McKeever, everybody. We got to pull up and send you out into the race day. And it's a good one. And tomorrow, we've got to pay tribute to Catherine McKee from Keeneland, just an unbelievably tragic passing that has shaken all kinds of players and particularly Keeneland goers, and hearts go out. But Scott Carson today and Pete and Ray Arsenault, Sid, Seth, and Scotty, good luck today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.